following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Rad Rob Radio Network. Through the years, we all remember when we first witnessed a national tragedy. We remember the good times and the bad times through either a song, a TV show, a monumental sports achievement, or even the smell of a particular food from when we were young. Welcome to the show that will take you on a journey through time to relive those iconic moments. Welcome to RTW Rewind, where old school rules. So, without any further delay, let's introduce you to the host of the show, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. I am your humble host, Radicalized Rob, Rob Francois. Hope everybody's doing well all around the world, and thank you for being here. This is a special week we do every single year during the week of SummerSlam. This is Rad Mania. Wait, goddamn, I already fucked it up. Hey, it's fucking Rewind, right? So this is a very special week we do once a year for the week of SummerSlam. It is the Summer of Rad. Today's topic will be SummerSlam 92, and I am joined by the very handsome and sexy Irishman. Well, I think he's Irish. It hasn't been confirmed yet. He is the host of It's Husey Hello and one of the founding fathers of Get My Go. It is the incomparable Husey. What's up, buddy? Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. the thing I like about this show is that I have one friend in real life who likes wrestling, and he's unfortunately a total AEW mark. And so I have no one to talk to apart from you or Chad about pro wrestling.
I'm glad to have you here, man. You've been bugging me for, Jesus, 3 or 4 weeks now. Let's do a show. And I'm like, come on. I mean, you're not a draw, dude. But I mean, I thought I'd do you a favor and have you on. And since it's SummerSlam season, you're really excited, especially with the crowds coming back. The crowds are back. And WWE is the hottest it's been in years, according to Dave Meltzer.
It's almost like I think he's become his own parody account.
He might be, yeah.
But the thing, yeah, because I watched the SmackDown the week or the day before Money in the Bank, and I thought it was fantastic. Money in the Bank 2021, I loved it. Like, even with the most critical, cynical eye, I thought it was pretty much a perfect show, apart from the dumb broads at the start. But it was a great event. So I thought, holy shit, I'm full on back in the mark mode. And of course, I haven't watched any since. I watched some highlights, but it's looked good. Some of the stuff that I've seen, the Roman Reigns and John Cena stuff has been typically brilliant. But I haven't
watched. You expect that, right? I mean, John Cena is probably one of the last of those big, big, huge stars of another generation. Yeah, Roman's doing great stuff, but I mean, you got to have somebody there that can dance with Roman, and there's nobody better right now than John Cena. Sans The Rock, if he ever comes back.
Yeah, but The Rock's coming in for WrestleMania, and it's after that, I think wrestling's dead. How do you even compete with trying to top a Rock match? Like, it's never going to happen. So enjoy these last 2 years, fans, because it's done. And then all this AEW shit, all this stuff about CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, and then the Brock Lesnar rumors. Like, I don't care. Bruce Springsteen could be on AEW, and I'm not going to watch. I just don't give a shit. I'm 36. I've watched a lot of WWE. It's enough. Like, I don't need to have another new thing at this age.
I told a lot of people that Tony Khan could mess up the rapture. I don't care if Jesus was at AEW, I wouldn't watch it because he probably wouldn't go over. I think Cody would go over. So that being said, we're here to talk about some actually good wrestling, and that is SummerSlam from 1992, live from Wembley Stadium, the first SummerSlam, and well, the only SummerSlam to come from England. I bet they're still pretty hot about that. It's been a long time. How old were you when this happened?
1990. I was 6 years old.
Okay.
The thing about this, one of the reasons why I was so interested and wanted to do this one is we have every right to podcast on SummerSlam 92 as Jim Ross or Bruce Pritchard do, because they weren't there either.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. At least the retro guys aren't doing that either. So,
the Lady Killers.
People that know, they know. Oh, yeah. But did you? I don't assume you watched this live, did you, or did you watch it years later?
I did watch it live. The thing about this is that I was saying this to Chad a couple of days ago. The hype for this pay per view was like it was the only thing I could compare to was when the second Pierce Brosnan James Bond was coming out, and the news did this thing that they did with WWE, where as part of the promotion, they included the wrestling storylines in the news. So as a young kid and you're Mark and you think it's all real, and it's like, oh, the Queen did this and the war in Iraq. Oh, and the Ultimate Warrior was at a tag team match with the Nasty Boys. And you go, holy shit! And just for the James Bond thing, they were reporting on the villain as he was a real journalist, and it was very good. So I was fucking hyped for this. They give out a free sticker book that cost £1 because they knew every kid was going to buy it. Everybody was pumped for this. Wembley Stadium had something like 85,000 people. It was completely sold out. And even bigger, it went out free on TV over here.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that. I wasn't sure how that, how the TV worked over there, like what you got, what you were able to see live. So it was free. That's very interesting. I didn't know that.
It went out free because at the time, business in WWE in 92 was so bad.
Yeah.
But over here, it was as big as you call it, soccer.
If I remember right, I don't know if it was live to tape or if it's a tape delay. I don't remember what time it aired here in the States. I did watch it live, but being the fact that England was like 6 hours ahead of New York, I think. Did it go at normal time there? Do you remember offhand?
Yeah, it went out about in the early afternoon for us, and okay. Well, what isn't reported on the thing, there was a 45-minute intermission.
Yeah.
So that the Sky, it was shown on Sky Sports, they could show their regular news. And by the way, if anyone hears any a croaky voice, I went out last night and I must have drank 75,000 beers. I'm hungover. I've got the shits.
Really hungover? It's like 9 o'clock at night there. You're still hungover?
Oh yeah. Well,
or 11. I'm sorry. What time is there? It's
17 cares. Past 11. But don't 17. Quote me.
Yeah, I mean, this is an audio podcast and it's not live, so nobody really cares what time it is there. In any event, I'm surprised they did not go back to Wembley, given the fact that wrestling was really huge overseas. I mean, you guys had like Insurrection, or I'm like, you guys, you're in Ireland, you didn't have shit. The British, those fucks. They had Insurrection at least once a year. I think they had one more pay-per-view that was usually once a year. Rampage or some shit like that, but I'm surprised, given the fact that Wembley is such a huge attraction, they didn't bring a WrestleMania there.
Well, apparently SummerSlam last year was going to be at Wembley Stadium, and they were going to do Drew McIntyre versus that scumbag cheating cunt Tyson Fury.
Can you imagine that? That would have put butts in seats.
I despise Tyson Fury because they wanted Anthony Joshua, but he's like, fuck that. I'm an in-demand boxer. I'm not going to wrestle some sweaty, balding Scottish cunt.
Yeah, I mean, you probably would have done a better job.
Yeah, I'll take them both on. But in rewatching this pay-per-view a couple of days ago, just so I could take my notes, do you know the one thing that really stuck out that was quite shocking? This was the first ever WWE pay-per-view with no Hulk Hogan.
ever. 92, first one, really?
Yeah, keep being in every pay-per-view.
He left the WrestleMania 8. Yeah.
Yep.
That's pretty amazing. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, he was at Rumble that year. Sid threw him out. Yeah, no, you're right. Okay.
And it's weird because how quickly the business dropped, and there's like a noticeable change. But I also have to say about the event is, in hindsight, the entrance must drive Vince insane. Because if today, if WWE plays a stadium, the stage is like moving, interactive lights, lasers, all this stuff. At SummerSlam 92, it was literally just SummerSlam 92 banner, and they walked through a curtain. And the entranceway is way, way too long. They could have probably fit another 15,000 people in the stadium.
I agree. I'm not sure who set that up, but that was pretty funny. I mean, back in the day, they didn't have anything extravagant when it came to, you know, the entranceway. You know, it's typically in the old WWF, you know, the logo was on the forefront, and then they went to the neon fucking sign. They had that for several years, but the entranceway was very, very long, which actually helped the first match, because the first match was Money Inc., former tag team champions, taking on Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom, who had returned at WrestleMania 8 that year to cut a promo. And they came out here on motorcycles. So that actually worked out for them.
And ironically, this was supposed to have happened for WrestleMania 8, but Hawk got himself done for drugs, which didn't stick. And then they came back, and apparently in London, a lot of the wrestlers who were at the show but not booked on the card, such as Piper, Ric Flair, the Nasty Boys, were all going wild in London. And this was Hawk's last match for about 5 years at WWE.
Yeah, and it was. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. If you watch that match, a lot of people complained that Hawk actually looked like he was messed up during that match.
Yeah, but the thing about this, because we always talk about how we have hindsight broken, and we think, oh, the glory days of Earthquake and Tatanka. This event is pretty bad.
Yeah, it is. It really is. I liked it at the time, but yeah, when you go back, I mean, come on. Shawn Michaels and Rick Martel in a can't punch you in the face match. And that's, I think it's the first and only time that may have ever happened.
We'll get to that one. But yeah, this LOD versus Money Inc. match, the only memorable thing about it is the LOD entrance. And it's they look amazing on these Harley Davidsons. That's it. After the entrance, skip to the next.
It's, you know, this whole thing with Hawk and his demons and all that was really unfortunate, because having Paul Ellering back was a big deal. And they didn't get that long of a run with him because of, you know, Hawk's issues with drugs and alcohol. But I mean, like, they could have had a huge run if they, you know, just would have got together and stayed clean.
Yeah. And of course, Paul Ellering had Rocco, the talking puppet. Last time I seen something that small with the fist up its anus, it was in Bruce Pritchard's office backstage.
Yeah, pal.
So
he's dead.
I don't even know where to segue from that. But yeah, you know, I forgot about Rocco. What the fuck? Did Ellering ever come back and say anything about that, or why they thought that was a good idea, why they went along with that? Because I blocked that out of my memory. It was so horrible.
I just think it was Vince trying to be, we've got the Road Warriors, pal. Now let's make them kid friendly. He's like, but they're already massively over. Not in my watch, pal.
Yeah. Or he had something against Ellering, or maybe just wanted to make him look like a fool. I don't know. Maybe because he was smarter than Vince. I have no idea. But they were already selling the fake, you know, shoulder pad gimmicks with the rubber spikes on them. But, and I think they had, I want to say they had wrestling buddies at some point too. But, oh, it is what it is. Getting to this match, like I mentioned before, it looked like Hawk was visibly, you know, inebriated or pilled up or whatever. So he missed a bunch of spots in this match. This could have been a really, really good match and a great way to set off the card. But unfortunately, Hawk was not at his best. Money Inc. being the pros that they are, they, you know, and Animal, they got him through the match. But this one was kind of a dud for me. I expected a lot more given the talent in this ring.
The other thing about SummerSlam 92 is that it's got so many dead people in it that I thought I was watching The Walking Dead. Ha ha, hilarious.
It's pretty amazing. I even mentioned that last year before even, you know, animals, some other people died. If you look at 89, especially, like 89, like Survivor Series 89, there's at least one dead person in each match, okay. And almost on each team. And then you look at referees and announcers, like Gorilla and Bobby were both gone. It's it's pretty sad. But what did you think of this match, rewatching it?
Really shit. I thought Animal looked fat. Usually he looked like big and solid, but he had like a wobbling gut, and it's a sad sight to watch with the hindsight knowledge of what was going on.
Especially back then, that's 92. I mean, they're still in their mid to late 30s. So it's not like they were over the hill or, you know, out of their prime or anything like that. It's just, yeah, it sucks, dude.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they came back years later and I don't want to say redeemed themselves. I mean, they were given the tag team titles and got beat up by the New Age Outlaws. But, I mean, they didn't really have a fantastic run in WWE after that. But, this, like I said, this match could have been a lot more.
Oh, yeah. But sadly, Hawk and Animal are gone. But as we say, Virgil is still here.
Still here, still eating bread, still eating breadsticks.
He's a person of color, too, thankfully. Thank God.
Is he? I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of that. See, I don't see. I'm colorblind, so I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard that you like to wear a strap while you're watching a Virgil match, just in case something goes wrong.
That's completely fair. Mm-hmm. Asshole. Our second match. In fact, we didn't even talk about the dark matches. I'm sorry. There were actually two dark
matches. You talking about Virgil again?
Jim Duggan and the Bushwhackers took on the Mountie and the Nasty Boys. And a six-man tag that was part of the dark match. And Papa Shango defeated Chico Santana. So that's a fun fact.
Yeah, fantastically fun.
And that back then, hold on. What did you think of El Matador version of Tito Santana?
As a kid, I didn't understand it was him. I thought it was a different guy. I don't know. I thought it was at least more visually interesting than Tito Santana just coming out in a fucking t-shirt.
I do agree. And I thought the music was kind of cool too. But other than that, I mean, I didn't really, as an adult, never mind. You're not really an adult, but I didn't ever see him as a bullfighter. So I don't know what it was with Vince, especially with a guy like him that had been around for so long, was a former Intercontinental Champion and a tag team champion with Rick Martel. Why you would fuck with a guy like that? Like, just leave him. Like, he's a mid-carder, but he was still over. Like, he got a pretty decent response. There's no reason to change his gimmick at the end of his career.
Yeah,
and make him a fucking bullfighter.
Yeah, and bullfighters are fucking wimps anyway. They fight
on their own.
They've already been stabbed six times.
Yeah, they tease it and they run like a bunch of pussies.
A girl who takes it in the ace. In the ace? Never mind. By the way, from watching the Raw highlights, Nikki A.S.H., I wonder if she likes to take it in the A.S.S. Ooh!
I don't get it.
It's a bum sex thing.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Our second match on the actual card.
Speaking of bum sex, up next is Nails.
Very, very good segue. Nails defeated the aforementioned Virgil. Why was this on the fucking main card? Look what you had on the pre-card. And this is what they decided to go with because why?
Yeah. The whole thing about Nails is I don't understand the logic of having him as a character, because he was brought in, obviously, to feud with the Boss Man.
Yeah.
Then what? Then that feud ended after one match, but apparently Nails versus Undertaker was at one point penciled in for WrestleMania 9.
I wouldn't mind seeing that because Giant Gonzalez was very, very bad. But I'm assuming what I've heard from Nails is he probably didn't want to put Taker over.
Yeah, this match was horrible. And
horrible.
What made it even weirder is that Nails made his entrance in the stadium show with no theme music.
Yeah, just walking down. Yeah.
And then Vince was like, why isn't this guy getting over?
Well, British TV was like 5 weeks behind, so they probably had no idea who he was.
Yeah. No, but this was really bad. This did nothing to help anyone. Like, oh, wow. Although, I'll give Virgil credit. His theme music is excellent.
Yes.
Yep, can you play it underneath this bit?
Yeah, sure. I'll do that in post. How about that? If you would have let me know ahead of time, I could have plugged it into my Rodecaster. So good on you for that.
Yay, Virgil.
Our next match was Rick Martel, who's actually Tito Santana's former partner, taking on the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, in the birth of his heel run as a singles competitor that year, with Sensational Sherry as his manager in a, I don't even know what the technical term was, no punches in the face match. I don't remember how they booked it. But yeah, both guys are pretty boys. And it was heel on heel, which I'm still shocked that Vince even did that. And neither of them could punch each other in the face or they would lose the match.
We were robbed of a classic here.
Agreed.
This could have stole the show, but instead they went with some dumb comedy gimmick. But the only good thing about it is Sherry's arse, which at the time was the most shocking, groundbreaking thing that she would wear that in public. And it's like a little bit more.
I agree. Her she had a decent body. Oh, yeah. Not so much in the face, which is why she covered up with all that makeup. But I'm just fucking with it. I can't talk ill of the dead. That's horrible.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Sherry, see if you go back and watch any time she was in the ring with Dusty Rhodes during that Macho Man Dusty feud. Dusty always figures out a way to grope her.
I didn't know that. That's good on him.
Yeah, he's always like feeling up her legs, or he's touching her arse. A fat piece of shit. Glad he's dead.
So this match ended in a double countout. So if the stipulation wasn't bad enough, we didn't get any kind of a clean finish. You're right. This could have been a match to steal the show, because both Rick Martel and even Shawn Michaels at that point in his career could have put on a fantastic technical match. I can get. See, you look at Pritchard and the way he breaks it down, like, oh, it's genius creative, because both these guys, you know, to work a match without punching each other in the face, you know, it's brilliant. We've never seen it before, and they can do all this, and there's so many different ways they can put it, but end up still being a pile of shit because they booked a double count out, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, and then it led to nothing anyway.
To nothing. Like, that, yeah, there was no payoff at all.
Yeah, stupid.
It was just a one-off. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who booked this shit, pal, but
Vince McMahon. begin playing the Beverly Brothers music now.
Gotcha.
There you go.
The Natural Disasters, Earthquake and Typhoon, took on the Beverly Brothers with the Genius. I remember the Beverly Brothers from the AWA because the Minnesota promotion.
You mean the Genius?
Genius. You know, actually, fun fact, I am friends with the Genius on Facebook.
Fun fact, his brother was a pedophile.
I didn't know that. Getting back to what I was going to say before I was rudely interrupted, I remember the Beverly Brothers from the AWA. They were the Wrecking Crew, and they were a very good tag team. There's another podcast, I can't remember the name of it, that had no clue who the Beverly Brothers were when they came in, but they were the Destruction Crew of the AWA. Obviously, you know, Earthquake and Typhoon, the former this fucking tugboat, which is a perfect gimmick for him. I don't understand the Typhoon thing, but I thought Tugboat fit really well. He looked really good in that sailor outfit.
Yeah, he also had great theme music, and that's the only part of this match that stood out to me, was how great the Beverly Brothers music is. Like, they look great.
They did, but the match itself sucked, which is unfortunate, because I'm not going to, you know, all these guys, except for Nails and Virgil, were actually talented, but for whatever reason, on this day, it was just shit. But the funny part about it is the crowd was still into it. Like, they didn't give a fuck. They were just happy to see wrestling.
Yeah, that is the one good thing you can say about the show, is that it's a completely hot stadium crowd. Like, even Virgil gets a pop, and he's, you know, has a shaved head.
Yeah, exactly right. Crush defeated the Repo Man. Again, These are just like one-off matches. None of these ever led to a program or a feud. I mean, you're coming off of WrestleMania 8 with the return of the Ultimate Warrior, the departure of Hulk Hogan. You have Ric Flair there in the mix. You got Mr. Perfect as a sidekick. I mean, that does play into the match we're going to talk about a little bit later. But, dude, it's not like they were short on talent. Why did they not have any programs booked other than Macho Man and Savage? Because, I mean, even Brett and Davey wasn't really a program. It was another one-off. So I don't get the booking coming off one of your major pay-per-views.
Yeah, but the thing as well with this match that was weird is that Crush seemed ideally to be one of Vince's pushes. Like, he's this naturally big, super strong guy. Mm-hmm. And Crush was, this is the thing that's so weird. Crush came in as a third member of Demolition, and he's still Crush, but they don't acknowledge that he's been there before. And the Repo Man was also in Demolition, so that could have at least been the storyline that he had axed or smashed or whatever the fuck, had Crush going down the wrong path, and now he's coming to get revenge. But instead, nope, it's just a random match in the stadium on the second biggest pay-per-view of the year.
That's a great point. That's something I didn't really put a lot of thought into. They completely disavowed their previous gimmicks, especially with a guy like Repo Man, which is really strange. I mean, look, Barry Darso was a pretty big guy, too. And Demolition was a hot act for a long time. Most people knew who he was, you know, when he put the freaking the mask, you know, the little raccoon fucking whatever they put in his eyes. I never understood that at all. But that would have been a fantastic build-up if there was resentment between the two because they were, you know, formerly part of the tag. Like, you know, Smash could have been completely jealous of Crush, you know, kind of going in there and, you know, taking over their spot. But, yeah, they dropped the ball.
Yeah, maybe Axe could have done a run-in or a guest ref or something, you know. Especially because it's SummerSlam 90. Demolition versus Heart Foundation is one of the best matches fucking ever.
Ever. No, yeah, absolutely right. I don't think Axe could have done a run-in because he had heart problems at that time. So,
Stupid heart.
I popped Healy. That never happens. The Ultimate Warrior defeated Randy Savage by countout. So not only do we have a double countout previously in the night, but now one of your semi-mains or double mains or whatever you want to call it, which was eighth on the card with three matches after it, which is very fucking strange for their main title. I get the British thing with Davey Boy and all that, but Jesus Christ, dude. I don't understand why they put this match here. Go ahead.
I have some trivia for you to explain the finish.
Okay.
Originally, Warrior versus Macho Man 3 was supposed to happen at WrestleMania 9.
Okay.
Because, of course, they'd done the Warrior beat him at WrestleMania. Then they go to this draw. But I have a feeling that Macho Man was supposed to win this. But old Hellwig said, fuck that, I'm not doing the job.
That doesn't surprise me. And then even after that, they put him in a tag team, the Ultimate Maniacs or whatever, which didn't last long because then Hellwig fucking bounced and left Macho Man and on his own. Mr. Perfect had to come back and be a good guy.
Yeah, but the thing about this match, one of the big complaints that happens in modern wrestling is two people will wrestle at, say, I don't know, the Royal Rumble, and then five events later, they're still in a storyline. With Hogan versus with Macho versus Warrior, they wrestled 18 months previously at fucking Mania 7, and now the rematch at SummerSlam 92. Like, it seems like a big deal where it's like, holy shit, I've got to see this. And Hogan versus, I keep saying Hogan, Warrior versus Macho Man was advertised as the main event.
It was. I didn't know that. It wasn't advertised as the main event here, which is strange. And they had a fantastic match at WrestleMania 7. That was one of my favorite Warrior matches of all time, even though there was so many false finishes and all that. But, it was a great match.
Yeah, but the build-up to this match was excellent with the whole thing of, fucking Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect.
Whose side is Mr. Perfect going to be on? Like, they want, like, he's going to be in somebody's corner to give him the edge. I remember that.
Yeah. And there's a lost, not a lost classic, but there's a match that doesn't get spoken about a lot where it was the Nasty Boys against Macho Man and Warrior. And the craziest thing is when they show you the pre-package video before the match, it shows you all these WWF events happening in these really small venues and then cut to a stadium where you're like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah, I don't know who dropped the ball on that one, but no, you're right. That was actually funny. That was the Ultimate Maniac thing I was talking about earlier. I think they only had one match together, if I don't recall.
But I have to say, this is my favorite match on the show.
Really? Yeah, are you ribbing me, dude?
No, I loved it. See, I'm one of these people that if you have a match and you do like a fucking triple moonsault into a suplex thing, that's not going to impress me. Mm-hmm. But if it's the crowd work and the characters, that's okay. The shit that I like in wrestling. And I have a very controversial opinion coming later on. But yeah, this is the best match in the card for me.
That's shocking. But I understand your point of view, dude. I mean, especially the fact that these guys are two of the biggest names at that time. And even though, you know, look, people give Hellwig a lot of shit for not being a great wrestler, but he still knew his character. And he was still over like nobody's business. Like, he knew what it took to get that crowd going. He might not have been a ring technician, but he knew how to work a crowd. Absolutely 1,000%. And Macho Man, I mean, we all know how fantastic he was. This match could have been on the level of that WrestleMania match, but it was so overbooked with the finish and the Mr. Perfect thing that just that's what kind of got in the way from this match. And, you know, in my lasting opinion of this match, I was just kind of pissed off that it could have been a lot more and we got a fuck finish out of it.
Yeah, the finish is frustrating, but interesting. There's a botch where Bret Hart over the Warriors chasing Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect with a chair, and it looks like he throws the chair at them, but it goes into the fucking crowd.
Yeah, I wish we could get that person on the show and ask him what it felt like to get hit in the head with a chair. But if they lived, I don't know if they did or not. Those chairs are pretty lethal.
Pat Patterson probably took the kid backstage to make him feel better. He's dead now.
Who, the kid or Pat Patterson?
Yeah, hopefully both.
Okay. Our next match was The Undertaker taking on the Ugandan Giant Kamala.
Yeah.
With Harvey Whippleman and Kimchi. And fresh off a no finish with a count out, we get a disqualification. Yeah, what the fuck, dude?
This is not a good match. But you know what the thing that always makes me interested is that heavyweight boxing champion Lennox Lewis was at SummerSlam 92. He walked Bulldog to the ring. I'd love to have known what he thought about Kamala and Virgil. Those gimmicks, he must have been ready to break someone's fucking face.
Elaborate on that.
Well, Lennox Lewis is black.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And Virgil was the what would you call it? The rebellious butler.
Okay. Yeah. I was gonna say, you know,
and Kamala was a Ugandan, as they called him, and this is a quote: the Ugandan savage.
I get what you're saying there. And dude, first of all, Lennox Lewis, how legit was that dude? Probably the last legit boxer we've ever had. Truly.
No. Anthony Joshua is better, and he would probably be friends with me if he would stop fucking calling the police on me.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, we won't get into that. This match could have been really, really good. Look, Kamala hadn't been around for a while. He made his return, but I mean, he's still a big dude and a really, really good character. And Taker was hot at that time.
Yeah, amazing. By Undertaker.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I know, I didn't catch that myself. It was an amazing entrance by The Undertaker.
Yes, it was, with the hearse and all that. Yeah,
throw and all that shit. But you see, think about Uganda's, fucking Kamala's music is excellent.
It is, yes. Yes, it is.
I might make it the intro music to my next podcast.
You're big on the music of this show, by the way. I expected this from Durban, but not you.
Hey, man, I'm a big fan of the music, man. He'd probably have heat with this. I love that. Before, while we're on the subject of Durban,
yeah,
I'm going to call him out as a scumbag for those comments on Maybe I'm Amazed.
Yeah, can we address that, please, publicly? Because nobody knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think Maybe I'm Amazed at the size of the gun that I'm going to buy to shoot Durbant in one of his kneecaps.
How could he say that's not even one of Paul's top 10 or top? I don't even know if he put in the top 30.
Yeah, I've got hate with Durbant for trashing the song. Then I have hate with Vince for putting that song on his list because it was supposed to be about Wings. That's a Paul McCartney solo track. That podcast was problematic.
It was. It was horrible. But, you know, that's what happens when Durbant's on. He just brings the show down completely. That's why I don't have him on here at all. He had to wear a mask last time he was on one of my shows.
I think we should sully Durbant's good name. I'm going to call him a racist. Mike Durbant wanted to call Kamala not the Ugandan savage, but the Ugandan TV stealer.
Moving on to our next match, we had the Native American Tatanka taking on the Berserker with Mr. Fuji. Again, I talked about the AWA earlier, which you probably never even heard of until you're about 35 or so. The Berserker came from there. He was actually a pretty decent mid-carder under the Yukon Nord, John Nord. But this gimmick here as a Berserker was kind of a, I don't know if it was a direct ripoff or a tribute or a version of Bruiser Brody, because they're, you know, it's the same size. He had pretty much the same look. They did look a lot alike. He did a lot of the same mannerisms. When it comes to Tatanka as a Native American, I didn't buy it at all. I mean, he didn't look Native American one bit. I think that was a horrible gimmick for him.
Yeah, I thought Conan was Tatanka.
Oh no, that's funny. See, I thought Max Moon was Tatanka, but yeah,
I thought funny. Max Moon was Gangabirdy.
Which
I thought Disco Inferno got molested by Bruce Pritchard.
What'd you think of this match, Easy?
Didn't watch it.
You did. You just literally skipped over to the main event.
Yeah, I must have. I don't even remember seeing it. I liked the Berserker's big Philly boots, though. They look nice and warmy.
They, yeah. And I didn't. the show sucks. I didn't.
You can't say that, Jeff. Jana Punich might not like it.
No, that's fair. That's a good point. Moving on to the main event, the last match, whatever you want to call it, is for the Intercontinental Championship. Yes, it went after the WWF Championship match. The British Bulldog was the challenger against the current Intercontinental Champion, Bret the Hitman Hart. Obviously, they went over their entire story of working together when the Hart Foundation took on the Bulldogs. The fact that Davey Boy knocked up Bret's sister, Diana, and then had to marry her because of it. So you had that going. It was babyface against babyface, while we had a heel versus heel earlier in the card. Completely bizarre booking of this card by Vince McMahon and his friends, which you can't blame Pritchard for that. Like you said, he wasn't there. So look what happens. Look, let that show you that the true genius of the WWF back then was Bruce Pritchard, because this card completely sucked.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts in at least the build-up to this match?
I remember that it was the first time I remember them doing a reality-based storyline. So you really did get the vibe of, fuck, is this, this is real? Like we all know wrestling is real, but this is particularly personally real.
Yep.
But are you ready for a controversial opinion?
I am absolutely ready, 1,000%.
Not a fan of this match at all.
At all.
I just, there's something about Bret Hart matches that bore the fuck out of me.
Oh boy.
It's like Seth Rollins. I like him as a heel, but as a baby face, he's kind of dull. Plus, Bret and Bulldog had a much better rematch at In Your House 5, which I remember really well.
You know you suck, right?
Who said that?
That is one of the worst opinions I've ever heard of a single match, especially one of this caliber with, you know, Bret Hart, one of the greatest technicians and wrestlers of all time, one of the greatest artist, as he likes to call himself, of all time against Davey Boy Smith.
Want to hear my Bret Hart meeting story?
Absolutely.
It's not one of Corey F. and Ryan's levels. One of the big questions I've always had is that what were the plans for Bret for Mania before Vince was like, we've got to let him go. I'd heard that it was, the plan was Austin was always going to wrestle Shawn Michaels, but it was also supposed to be Bret Hart versus Ken Shamrock. And I asked Bruce Pritchard about it. He denied it when I interviewed him. When I interviewed Ken Shamrock said, yeah, that was the plan. And then when I met Bret Hart at this Q&A thing, he said, well, I think that was supposedly the plan, but I think they were mostly too busy trying to figure out ways to fuck me.
That's a pretty good impersonation, by the way. That makes sense.
I was thinking about it when I was working on the highway. It's
you can never believe anything comes out of Bruce Pritchard's mouth, by the way. So if Ken and Bret said that was the plan, then I absolutely believe that. Which, I mean, we know how it worked out. I don't think I would have rather seen those two matchups. I think the way it happened was the way that it should have, because obviously we wouldn't have had the big birth of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Very up and comer, and that's the way it is there, man.
Yeah, he had a lot of potential. I can't believe you didn't like this match. Even going back and rewatching it now, you didn't pick up anything about the match that you enjoyed?
It's boring. I don't like tactical stuff. I like Hulk Hogan wildness.
What about the fact that Davey Boy was pilled up? You weren't a fan of that?
Yeah, he's English.
No, that's right. You hate the British. That's why you really didn't like the match. I get it now. Okay. Had nothing to do with Bret Hart. I mean, I do understand the Bret thing. He didn't have a lot of charisma, but that's the underlying factor. It was Davey Boy Smith. So if it was anybody else but Davey Boy against Bret Hart, you probably would have been okay with it?
I want to see Harry Smith in a match with Sheamus, and then Becky Lynch and Finn Balor and that new interviewer guy all went into the ring, and they break Harry Smith's knees, and they take his money.
I'm sure we can make that happen.
Thank you.
You're close to Pritchard, so,
Yeah.
Maybe just want to slide into his DMs and let him know that, here's your next money idea, man.
But this pay-per-view, though, I've got to say, in hindsight, because of the roster, it looks great. I'll never forget the build-up to it. Like, it was, you could not be a mark back then. Like, even if you were an adult, you were like, I think this is fucking real.
Yeah.
So that's why I have to rate it a 3 out of 5 Meltzers.
Based on the build-up and the build-up, the roster, and the fact that it's at this giant stadium with a hot crowd.
Yeah, and it's a spectacle.
It was a spectacle.
Because, and then when you look at SummerSlam 93, it's barely even a third the size of Wembley Stadium, and it's not good, and it's,
It was not good at all.
But for the Macho Man Warrior match alone, it's, I highly regard it, despite knowing that it's not a great card.
Yeah. No, that's fair. What did you think of the actual opening, which we didn't even really talk about, like with the royal trumpets or whatever the fuck they were there?
That's fucking English people. I always remember the little... I always remember that little cunt kid who goes, the British Bulldog's going to win whether he wants to or not. This is, I hope he's dead. I hope that retard caught AIDS in the COVID hospital, and then a terrorist shot his children in front of him.
What did you think of Bobby and Vince together as a commentary crew?
Fucking amazing. Bobby the Brain Heenan is... Well, here's my hot take of the week. Bobby the Brain Heenan was a great commentator.
He was. But so was Vince McMahon. I think Chad, whatever the fuck his name is. Chad would even say that Vince McMahon is underrated.
Yeah, he was great. And him and the thing about him and Bobby is that they're cracking each other up the whole show.
Yeah.
You know, like they're having a good time. I got to say, though, anyone who's got the network, go watch Road Wild 96, the one where Hogan had just turned the heel the first time. Bobby Heenan is drinking vodka throughout the show, and by the time they get to the main event, he is hammered. Like, it's not even like he's buzzed. Like, he's completely, like, he's talking about, and you hear how angry Tony Schiavone's getting. It's great. I go back and rewatch that match just for the sake of how drunk Heenan is.
What is the network? What's the network?
It's what the Americans call Peacock.
Ah, that one. Okay, yeah. I was wondering what you were referencing there. Bobby Heenan, or not Bobby Heenan, didn't deny it because he's dead. I think Tony Schiavone actually came out this year, or last year, and refuted that statement that he was inebriated.
Well, it's literally on his YouTube of him saying that.
Well, that's fair. Who watches that anyway?
I know.
All in all, I mean, what I take away from this is they made a fuck ton of money. They made about $2.2 million at the gates, which was up like $400,000 from the previous year. But which, can you really compare it to that? Because the previous year they were, what was 91? I think they were in like fucking Detroit or whatever, like in a 14,000 seat arena.
But the one, it is when you look at this roster, they could have had so many other better matches. Like Undertaker versus Ric Flair would have been good to see. I would have liked to have seen Roddy Piper was there, yet they didn't put him in a match.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. He was there with the bagpipe gimmick, with the Scottish Royal pipe smokers or whatever the fuck they were called.
Yeah, the blowers.
Yes.
That's why Pat Patterson Howard says, I want five blowers backstage. He says, oh no, lost in translation. Why? They should have had Roddy Piper versus Ric Flair.
That would have been a great match. And Roddy came off literally the best match of his entire career with the guy you don't like, Bret Hart. Yeah. Can we at least cover that match just a little bit? I mean, did you enjoy that one?
Well, Piper and Bret?
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of the best ever matches.
Okay, and that was a very technical-ish match. So why do you like that?
Because of the drama and the crowd work. Because Roddy Piper was a fucking genius. He made you think it was real.
Davey Boy was over, dude.
English.
Okay, that's fair.
Glad he's dead.
Yeah, there is a lot of dead people. And if you go down the card, I think the only one that's alive is
Diana Hart.
Diana Hart, she's still smoking, by the way. I don't know if you've seen her recently, but
Well, that's why Bulldog and Jim the Anvil got their wives drunk, so they would drug them so they could trade them and sexually assault them.
I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, it's a dark story. Yeah, they would basically drug rape each other's wives.
We need to put you on Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah, no English people. Tell you what, you do need to put me on, because people don't know, and I forgot to open this up with an apology, because I did the one thing that I hate happens to me, is that we were supposed to record last Friday, but I had to drop out about an hour before we were going to start, because I've been up all day at work and I was exhausted, so I was fading. So very sorry about the late cancellation. I hope this one made up for it, but I want to invite myself back on for another SummerSlam episode, because I want to talk about favorite matches per SummerSlam. You know, okay. one per event, and I will do that episode.
Well, if we're both still alive at this time next year, you never know what kind of variant of COVID or whatever else is going to come out. We could definitely do that again.
The Pat Patterson variant? No, I'll do it this year. There we go. There you go.
Okay. You heard it here first. Husey will be back at some point. Maybe right around Survivor Series time. Husey, where can we find you on social media and let everybody know what you got going on?
at the Hughie on Twitter, at the Hughie on Instagram. If you check my Instagram at the minute, there is a photograph before chaos exploded last night. The drama, Jesus Christ. You can find me on YouTube. Called Hughie Entertainment. That's where all my interviews of classic wrestlers, comedians, filmmakers, upcoming some porn star interviews, which I'm very excited about. And the podcast, It's Hughie Hello, which is the fully edited sound effects, bells and whistles shit. You can find it all good. Podcasts and streaming services, and if you're a pro wrestling fan on YouTube, check out Keeping It 100 Official, which by this time tomorrow will have passed 17.5 million views.
That's amazing.
Yes.
And we all know you're the lifeblood behind that. That's the only reason why that channel is over, is because you produce it.
That's why Conan said he had to block me on Twitter, because he DM'd me and he said, bro, Heidley Ho Hughie, you do so much work at the arc. You know how Conan talks, the character. He says, I got to block you out of sheer jealousy. You're too good.
Yep. You're more over than he is. So, but I mean, we all know that anyway.
Tony Khan's not jobbing me out.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Dude, I appreciate being here. I always have a blast talk with you. We never know what's going to happen. I'll probably have to heavily edit this show again, just like every other show, or even the last one we didn't even go on the air, but. it's one of the lost episodes, but I appreciate you being here, man. Don't forget, Get My Go is also on YouTube.
Get My Go, which will be returning after the summer, I hope, because I there's no fucking way I'm staying in the house during the summer.
Yeah, no, I hear you there, and so many more things to tackle on that show. We're not exactly sure what the direction we'll be going. But by the time this airs, if it is about you know who, JP, I probably won't be a part of it because I already just schooled his ass in front of the whole world.
Yeah,
on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter. Well, what do you think of that show, by the way?
It was a wonderful episode. But yeah, thing I've got to be 100% honest about JP is that I don't hate him. I just think he's a dick, like a stupid guy. It's not like I'm like, oh, I'm going to get you. It's the other one that I hate him.
Yes.
Christopher Martin, I think he's dangerous and he's a weirdo, and it would help JP to get the fuck away from him. Not that I want to talk to Wangden, but Martin is a little cunt. And out of all the offensive jokes we've told in this recording, nothing's worse than pretending to have cancer so that fucking Conrad Thompson will give you a retweet.
Yeah, pal.
Thank you for listening to this episode of RTW Rewind. For all the latest news and announcements, please follow us on Twitter at RTW Brand. You can also follow Rad Rob at Rad Rob Gaming. If you'd like to ask us any questions, you can email us at RTWRewind@gmail.com and we'll read them on the air. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, exclusively here on HMG on Realm and the Rad Rob Radio Network.